We'll begin with a story about the way the art of dance has been passed down from generation to generation and the impact of the past on the present, the very present today. Kate Guthrie writes in an essay titled Awakening Sleeping Beauty, "For the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, 1946 began with a flurry of activity as Sadler's Wells Ballet Company hastily put together a new production of Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty. Its premiere would mark the building's post-war reopening, as well as the troupe's inaugural performance as its resident ballet company. This prestigious event was supported by a huge grant from the Council for the Encouragement of Music and the Arts, with which new costumes and sets were commissioned from the eminent stage designer Oliver Massel. If the significance of the occasion contributed to the industrious atmosphere, recent events had created more work than was usual, even for a new production. For the previous 6 years, the Opera House had done its bit for the war effort by serving as a dance hall. Arias had been replaced by the strains of Glenn Miller, divas by soldiers dancing away the horrors of the war. Restoring its former glory was no small undertaking. The dance floor and two bandstands had to be removed, the red silk chairs brought out of storage, and the building repainted. At the same time, post-war shortages made it hard to source the materials required for Messel's extravagant new designs. The set had to be created from camouflage paint, while costumes and lampshades were cobbled together from the staff's clothing coupons. Pressed for time and unfamiliar with the large venue, the ballet company and orchestra rehearsed simultaneously in the main auditorium, surrounded by seamstresses and set constructors. The shortage of male dancers also meant that the company's principal male dancer, Robert Helpman, had to perform two roles, Carabosse and Prince Florimond. In the event, it seemed to many that a more topical ballet could not have been chosen. The opera house's transformation appeared magical, having survived the grimmest sequel of nights that it had known. The building could finally awaken from its long sleep, like Sleeping Beauty. The circumstances of the Sadler's Wells Ballet made the choice of Sleeping Beauty all the more appropriate as the company's move to Covent Garden signified its coming of age and consolidated Margot Fonteyn's place at its head. In the words of its founder, Ninette de Valois, it could awaken at last in a sumptuous court, a fitting reward for years of regal patience in adversity. As luck would have it, the company's final pre-war performance had been Aurora's Wedding, an excerpt from the third act of Sleeping Beauty, which made the parallel even stronger. The audience, only too ready to forget post-war austerity, dressed up for the occasion. Indeed, for Britain's elite, the opulence on stage and in the auditorium assuaged a fear that all the grace and elegant things from the old world had passed permanently away, as John Maynard Keynes, the celebrated economist and one-time chair of the Covent Garden Committee, explained, it caused an extraordinary feeling of uplift when it was suddenly appreciated that perhaps they had not entirely vanished. Even the strong sense of mothballs would not mar this prestigious event. From the opening night, critics responded enthusiastically to de Valois' anglicized Russian classic, where previously she had been severely criticized in many quarters for attempting anything without calling upon the help of a good number of foreign artists. This, in particular, with reference to the male dancers. Her doubters now found themselves eating their words. The season at the Royal Opera House was unanimously acclaimed as a great success. The Sadler's Wells Ballet, it seemed, had finally trumped Diaghilev, staging a ballet that even he had failed to make successful. Ticket sales confirmed the troupe's achievement. Initially planned to show until the March 23rd date, the run ended up being significantly extended. Over almost 19 weeks, More than 250,000 people attended the Opera House's longest ballet season to that time. This was British ballet at its Russian best, a first-class spectacle worthy of a war-weary but victorious democracy. As we heard, the opening reopening of the Royal Opera House with the Sadler's Wells Ballet Company is an important event in the history of ballet. And esteemed dancer, teacher, and ballet master Henry Danton was there. The Times of London reports at the passing of Henry Danton at the age of 102. Henry Danton was 100 when he received the Royal Academy of Dance's Adeline Genet Silver Medal. He had actually won the prestigious award 77 years earlier, but a wartime medal shortage meant that the medal itself could not be struck. As a member of Sadler's Wells Ballet, he had appeared in the February 1946 Sleeping Beauty, the first post-war production at the Royal Opera House. This was a whiz-bang, wonderful new production, he told the Daily Telegraph, adding that his were supporting roles as a cavalier to Gillian Lynn's Fairy, as suitor to Margot Fonteyn's Aurora in the Rose Adagio, and in Frederick Ashton's new Pas de Trois for the piece. When Ballet Theatre of Scranton presents Aurora's Wedding and another work this Friday, artistic director Joanne Arduino will have brought the piece to life with her own creative vision, but also having absorbed insights into the ballet from her dear mentor, Henry Danton, who was there when history was made. Ballet Theatre of Scranton, under the artistic direction of Joanne Arduino, will invite you to a double wedding this Friday evening at 7 at the Theatre at North, a two-act ballet featuring Aurora's Wedding from The Sleeping Beauty and Kittri's Wedding from Don Quixote. And we had a visit from Joanne Arduino at the Benko Studio to talk with us a little bit about the history of ballet theatre and about what we'll experience this Friday evening.
Ballet Theatre of Scranton was founded in 1958 by my mentor, the late Constance Reynolds, who was known as the Grand Dame of Dance in northeastern Pennsylvania. She began in her backyard teaching students in the Moscow, Pennsylvania area. And then she moved to the Y. And when her reputation started to get known that she was a wonderful ballet teacher, more and more people started to follow her. So then she started her own dance studio. And after a while, when she cultivated the dancers that she thought they were to a level that they could reach higher heights, she founded the not-for-profit Ballet Theatre of Scranton. And that was in 1958. She actually started teaching in the 40s, but the company was founded in 1958. And it's a regional semi-professional dance company. We have some dancers that have gone on to professional careers, and then others that just take it for all of the benefits that a dance training has to offer. Mrs. Reynolds was the artistic director until about 1990. And through that time, I had assisted her and then became the associate with her. And then 1991, she asked me to step on as the artistic director of ballet theater because she was up in age. And so since 1991, I have been the artistic director of ballet theater. Probably, Erica, most people know us for our annual holiday gift of the Nutcracker. And that originally started at Marywood University. It is now at the Theater at North. And I'm very, very proud and happy to say that this coming November, we will be celebrating our 50th anniversary. And we were told by Dance Magazine, the national magazine, quite a while ago, that we're the only company in the United States that does Nutcracker as a gift to the community. Most people do it as their major fundraiser for their year. And it's difficult, but it's in our blood that we really want to give back. And so over, I would say, 400,000 people have seen it to date, and we do educational shows. And last year, we added a sensory-friendly performance. So we're looking forward to this November. It always was the 3 days after Christmas. That's what Mrs. Reynolds originally had it. And after COVID, I sort of had a Christmas off since 1976, and I said, oh, this is sort of nice. Maybe we can kick off the holiday season. So I moved it to Thanksgiving weekend. But that's a sort of a short history of Ballet Theatre of Scranton.
We're asking you that you'll come back and talk to us at the 50th anniversary.
I would be very happy to
celebrate that with us and with you. It seems that the history of Western storytelling, Shakespeare particularly, always there's a wedding, Midsummer Night's Dream, the fairy tales, there are weddings. What do you make of the fact that there's often a wedding in these fairy tales or these stories that are perennial?
Well, we've done our share of the Dead Lady ballets, the Giselles and the La Sylphides and those, and they are absolutely gorgeous ballets, the long romantic period tutus and that style. But sometimes you just need to have a refreshed look, and the fairy tale ballets are so whimsical and just lovely. And so we will be doing two weddings. It's called a double wedding. And we are doing the third act of Sleeping Beauty, which is Aurora's wedding. And we're doing the last act of Don Quixote, which is Khitri's wedding. And I selected those this year because our dancers usually stay with us maybe into their 20s, some only till they're finished with high school. And I have two very lovely, talented dancers that I think are going to go on and could go on to professional careers. And I didn't want one of them to have a lead and the other one not to be showcased as well, because they both are very different dancers, but very good dancers. And so I picked Aurora's wedding for a lovely dancer. She's a senior at Scranton Prep. Her name is Laura Durkin. And she's very petite, and she has a lovely style, and she's a strong dancer. She's very graceful, and her style is more princessy. The other person is Elizabeth Schneider. Not that she's not a princess, but she goes to Abington Heights High School. She's a senior, and she has a more bravura style. She leaps and she jumps, and she just has a sharp stylistic way about her. So she will be perfect in Don Quixote. So I think they were excellent choices for those two young women. And both of them have studied extensively in the summers at different very prestigious programs. And Laura will now move on to do her graduate studies in North Carolina School for the Arts. And Elizabeth is going to the University of Pittsburgh, and she will continue dancing. So I'm really very proud of them. Now, they will have professional partners that will partner with them in this production. Two of them have danced with us in Nutcracker prior. In Don Quixote, Basilio will be George Sanders from New York City. Now, he dances with the Metropolitan Opera Ballet now and had danced previously with Twyla Tharp. And the other one is Sanford Placide, and he will dance the prince in Aurora's wedding. And he has danced for years with Dance Theater of Harlem and just didn't retire from there, but stopped and is now freelancing and looking for a new adventure and new direction in his life. So they will both be here to partner our beautiful ballerinas.
Tell us a little bit, if you would, about what happens in Act 3 with Aurora. We just think of Sleeping Beauty.
After the kiss, she wakes up and she gets married and happily ever after. That's true. And one thing that you were just saying, I did bring in a Ballet Theatre alumna, Karen Lavelle Mitchell, who was the creative director at Radio City's Rockettes for 25 years. She's a lovely, lovely dancer. And she danced with us both Khitri and Aurora. So she came and coached the girls additionally to help them out. So, you know, everybody has a little bit to offer, and that's what you take away from those experiences to help you grow as an artist. But getting back to Aurora's wedding, there is, of course, the Grand Pas de Deux, which is the piece de resistance of the act. But it begins with the courtiers and the big celebration. The queen and king are celebrating the wedding. There is a divertissement for four or three dancers called the Jewels. We have Sapphire, Diamond, Silver, and Gold, and they do a beautiful piece together. There is Puss in Boots and the White Cat, which is delightful. It's so adorably cute, and the music and the way the choreography is really lovely. After that, it is a very famous, the Bluebird Pas de Deux, which is the Bluebird and Prince Florine, and that is a pas de deux with two variations and a coda. And then it is Red Riding Hood and the Wolf. And then after that, it's the Grand Pas de Deux and a big celebration. But for any age, children and adults alike, it is a very entertaining and beautiful ballet.
What is perennially wonderful about dancing to music of Tchaikovsky, whether it be Nutcracker or Sleeping Beauty or Swan Lake?
It is just so melodic. And for a dancer, it's very easy to dance to. And it inspires you, and you can feel the emotion in it, so that emotion has an easier time to be expressed in your movement. Now, I also have to say, Don Quixote is Minkus, And it's just such powerful music, and that makes you want to dance also. And Don Quixote, of course, is full of Spanish variations, and Espada the Toreador and Mercedes, who dances around daggers put into the floor, and she dances through them and around them, and the matadors and the jota and the fandango, and so many exciting dances that celebrate Khitri's wedding. And that pas de deux is very famous as well.
And you're always very diligent about respecting the dancer's setting, that they not only have this gorgeous music to dance to, but that they are arrayed in lovely, beautiful costumes, and the setting transports us as the audience and the dancers. But also then you have your longtime friend that you have to tell us about and introduce us to, Dennis Size, who makes it all seem magical.
He does. He says, "We make the magic." And it's true. And I remember your colleague Larry one time saying to me, theater is in ballet theater's name for a reason, because it isn't just about dance, it's about the whole. Yeah, it's about the costumes and the lighting and the sets and the dance. The dance, of course, is the most important, but what surrounds it makes it the theater. And as you said, my dearest friend is Dennis Size, and he's a wonderful person. He's been interviewed here many times, and he has a real gift for lighting. He's originally from Scranton, and he has won multiple Emmy Awards and has traveled all over the world lighting very famous people. He lit Kate Middleton's wedding. He was with President Obama. He was with a past Pope and all kinds of people that he has lit. And so I'm very grateful to him because he comes back every year to light two of my performances. And not just because of our friendship, but he also said, you know, he lights television a lot, and this to him gives him more freedom, and he gets to be more creative in the live theater productions. So he plays, as he calls it. And I wanted to tell you one other thing. This choreography was originally by Petipa, and I learned it from my other mentor, the late Henry Danton. And Mr. Danton set both of these ballets for ballet theater in, let me think what year, 1983. He set The Sleeping Beauty first for our 25th anniversary of ballet theater. And then again in 2008, we did it, the full-length ballets. And he set Don Quixote, the full-length, in 2000. So I was very fortunate to be by his side when he set those ballets, because you can look at something on video, but to learn it from a master, that's how it gets passed down. Because they know all the innuendo, they know all the nuances, and that's the exciting part about that. I remember him telling me a story when I was learning Giselle from him. He said, well, when Margot, meaning Margot Fonteyn, who was his friend, and he said, oh, when we were on the south of France, he would talk about the stories about them. But he said, when she came out of the door, when she was Giselle, she just stopped and looked at the audience. And that's all you have to do. You have to just stop and let them take you in and own the stage before you even move. But those kind of things, you can't see, learn from a video. You learn from the masters.
How fortunate these dancers are.
Agreed.
Because they're in the line, right? They're
right,
in the
I line. Agree.
When you assemble at the theater at North, tell us why you like that space.
Well, there are many spaces we've performed in. The theater at North has a really intimate feeling about it, which is lovely, because when you're sitting in the audience, you don't feel like you're apart from it. You feel like you are a part of it. And so you really feel like you're engaged. And I think that's really beautiful about that theater. Besides it being intimate, it's a lovely theater. I mean, I think it seats 800, and it's a state-of-the-art, and they have a very good staff there that is very helpful, and so we have a good relationship with them.
And when will you be doing it so that we can take it all in and cry and throw rice?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because when you enter the theater, we will have bouquets and things. And at the final bow, the two brides are going to throw their bouquets into the audience. So you want to be coming to a wedding besides a dance performance. This is on May the 2nd, which is Friday evening at the Theater at North at 7 p.m. We also do an educational show at 10 a.m. for regional school students. But that evening at 7 is the general public, and tickets are available at the door.
Joanne Arduino, Artistic Director of Ballet Theatre of Scranton, speaking with us in anticipation of a double wedding this Friday, May 2nd at 7 in the evening at the Theatre at North in Scranton. A two-act ballet featuring Aurora's Wedding from the Sleeping Beauty Ballet of Tchaikovsky and Khitri's Wedding from Don Quixote by Leon Minkus. There will be lighting design done by Emmy Award-winning Scranton native Dennis M. Size. For more information on the web,
ballet-scranton.org, ballet-scranton.org, and you can secure tickets at the door or tututix.com, tututix.com, Ballet Theater of Scranton, under the artistic direction of Joanne Arduino, presenting a double wedding this Friday, May 2nd at 7 in the evening at the Theater at North. For more information, ballet-scranton.org. You're tuned to Art Scene on WVIA. We may be more familiar with music from Tchaikovsky's ballet, The Sleeping Beauty, but not so much our familiarity with the Minkus Don Quixote. So we heard Joanne Arduino reference the pas de deux as being one of the standouts of Don Quixote. We'll hear music from Don Quixote, the pas de deux, on WVIA with the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, performing under the direction of Robert Irving, the orchestra of the Royal Opera House. We'll begin with a story about the way the art of dance has been passed down from generation to generation and the impact of the past on the present, the very present today. Kate Guthrie writes in an essay titled Awakening Sleeping Beauty, "For the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden, 1946 began with a flurry of activity as Sadler's Wells Ballet Company hastily put together a new production of Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty. Its premiere would mark the building's post-war reopening, as well as the troupe's inaugural performance as its resident ballet company. This prestigious event was supported by a huge grant from the Council for the Encouragement of Music and the Arts, with which new costumes and sets were commissioned from the eminent stage designer Oliver Massel. If the significance of the occasion contributed to the industrious atmosphere, recent events had created more work than was usual, even for a new production. For the previous 6 years, the Opera House had done its bit for the war effort by serving as a dance hall. Arias had been replaced by the strains of Glenn Miller, divas by soldiers dancing away the horrors of the war. Restoring its former glory was no small undertaking. The dance floor and two bandstands had to be removed, the red silk chairs brought out of storage, and the building repainted. At the same time, post-war shortages made it hard to source the materials required for Messel's extravagant new designs. The set had to be created from camouflage paint, while costumes and lampshades were cobbled together from the staff's clothing coupons. Pressed for time and unfamiliar with the large venue, the ballet company and orchestra rehearsed simultaneously in the main auditorium, surrounded by seamstresses and set constructors. The shortage of male dancers also meant that the company's principal male dancer, Robert Helpman, had to perform two roles, Carabosse and Prince Florimond. In the event, it seemed to many that a more topical ballet could not have been chosen. The opera house's transformation appeared magical, having survived the grimmest sequel of nights that it had known. The building could finally awaken from its long sleep, like Sleeping Beauty. The circumstances of the Sadler's Wells Ballet made the choice of Sleeping Beauty all the more appropriate as the company's move to Covent Garden signified its coming of age and consolidated Margot Fonteyn's place at its head. In the words of its founder, Ninette de Valois, it could awaken at last in a sumptuous court a fitting reward for years of regal patience in adversity. As luck would have it, the company's final pre-war performance had been Aurora's Wedding, an excerpt from the third act of Sleeping Beauty, which made the parallel even stronger. The audience, only too ready to forget post-war austerity, dressed up for the occasion. Indeed, for Britain's elite, the opulence on stage and in the auditorium assuaged a fear that all the grace and elegant things from the old world had passed permanently away, as John Maynard Keynes, the celebrated economist and one-time chair of the Covent Garden Committee, explained. It caused an extraordinary feeling of uplift when it was suddenly appreciated that perhaps they had not entirely vanished. Even the strong sense of mothballs would not mar this prestigious event. From the opening night, critics responded enthusiastically to de Valois' anglicized Russian classic, where previously she had been severely criticized in many quarters for attempting anything without calling upon the help of a good number of foreign artists. This, in particular, with reference to the male dancers. Her doubters now found themselves eating their words. The season at the Royal Opera House was unanimously acclaimed as a great success. The Sadler's Wells Ballet, it seemed, had finally trumped Diaghilev, staging a ballet that even he had failed to make successful. Ticket sales confirmed the troupe's achievement. Initially planned to show until the March 23rd date, the run ended up being significantly extended. Over almost 19 weeks, more than 250,000 people attended the Opera House's longest ballet season to that time. This was British ballet at its Russian best, a first-class spectacle worthy of a war-weary but victorious democracy. As we heard, the opening reopening of the Royal Opera House with the Sadler's Wells Ballet Company is an important event in the history of ballet. And esteemed dancer, teacher, and ballet master Henry Danton was there. The Times of London reports at the passing of Henry Danton at the age of 102. Henry Danton was 100 when he received the Royal Academy of Dance's Adeline Genet Silver Medal. He had actually won the prestigious award 77 years earlier, but a wartime medal shortage meant that the medal itself could not be struck. As a member of Sadler's Wells Ballet, he had appeared in the February 1946 Sleeping Beauty, the first post-war production at the Royal Opera House. This was a whiz-bang, wonderful new production, he told the Daily Telegraph, adding that his were supporting roles as a cavalier to Gillian Lynn's Fairy, as suitor to Margot Fonteyn's Aurora in the Rose Adagio, and in Frederick Ashton's new Pas de Trois for the piece. When Ballet Theatre of Scranton presents Aurora's Wedding and another work this Friday, artistic director Joanne Arduino will have brought the piece to life with her own creative vision, but also having absorbed insights into the ballet from her dear mentor Henry Danton, who was there when history was made. Ballet Theatre of Scranton, under the artistic direction of Joanne Arduino, will invite you to a double wedding this Friday evening at 7 at the Theatre at North, a two-act ballet featuring Aurora's Wedding from The Sleeping Beauty and Kittri's Wedding from Don Quixote. And we had a visit from Joanne Arduino at the Benko studio to talk with us a little bit about the history of ballet theater and about what we'll experience this Friday evening.